We're learning that a couple of things that affect a lot of people's health in this area that are issues of concern for public health officials, and one of them is that a number of people, a larger number of people in Ottawa than in other parts of the province, young people have considered attempting suicide, and so public health officials are talking about putting more money towards suicide prevention in 2011.
Which is a good thing. The money is, as Dr. Ezra Levy has said, is not a lot of money, but it's trying to be targeted within the constraints of what they're able to do, to target in areas where the money will go to direct line help. So public health nurses in schools, agencies that provide the help to students with regards to suicide prevention. But if anything, this just raises more awareness, just as the Royal Ottawa Hospital has campaigns to raise awareness about the situation. This, I think, goes in that direction. You need a lot more resources to be able to help and identify people at risk, get the assistance for them early on, and prevent either suicide attempts or actual completion of suicide in order to make a difference. But at least they're trying to do what they can within the limitations of their budgets.
It's a tricky area, and we've talked about it before. There are lots of organizations in Ottawa that are trying to address the problem, but it's something that actually reaches the emergency room as well, because there are a number of people who harm themselves and end up in the emergency room, and apparently that's 10% higher in Ottawa than it is across the province.
Yeah, and one of the problems is that for many situations where you've sent someone that you're concerned about who has suicidal ideation and who you want to have assessed, a lot of times they're released from hospital because they're found not to be, the intent is not there. But the problem is follow-up and finding someone who can see them quickly, make an assessment, provide treatment if necessary, and that's the problem. You can use the emergency room, but a lot of times nothing else happens. They're assessed, they're considered to be not actively or suicidal, and so they're sent home, and that's where it drives parents and the patients themselves to great distress, because you're left sort of flapping in the breeze saying, okay, what else do we do now?
Another area where numbers are on the rise, there's a report in The Citizen this morning that sexually transmitted infections are at their highest rates in 10 years and are particularly growing among the young adult population.
Well, this is interesting because the question you have to ask is, why are the rates now increasing when they were decreasing before? What has changed in the mode of thinking that has led to more risky behavior? And that's the key word, is risky behavior. The fear and the risk perception has to be less, Mark, if someone is doing something more. I mean, again, you have to look at a thought process of what's going on. And part of that is due to the perception that a lot of the diseases that are out there are treatable. Many of them are chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis. They are treatable diseases, and you can eradicate them with an antibiotic. Others, not so. HIV can be treated and controlled, but it's a chronic, a lot of times it becomes a chronic disease, but it's always there. Herpes infections are treatable, but are lifelong conditions. Human papillomavirus or genital warts and cervical cancer, treatable, but quite damaging. So again, we have to ask the question, what is it that is reducing the idea that there isn't as much danger? I would suggest that part of this is very similar to what we look at in the article later on that talks about the vaccination rates not being as much. When people don't see disease as much, or at least a section of the population does not think that the danger is out there, behaviors will change. And so in this case, you see less vaccination rates because you don't see these diseases as often. Though Dr. Levy has mentioned that there have been children who have had a lot of preventable diseases, vaccine-preventable diseases this year in Ottawa. And so the idea is that if you have people not vaccinating children, the same mode of thinking with regards to not seeing that risk is going to be prevalent also in the younger population that's coming through the generation that says the risk is not really there. And so I think that's part of it. I'm not saying that's the whole answer, but if we're looking for reasons why this is happening, you always have to look at behavior and why this behavior is acting as if there isn't as much risk.
And in both cases, we're talking about putting more public health money behind it. And it speaks to, you know, it's budget time and there's a crunch and everything, but it speaks to the issue of whether we spend money on prevention or we spend money on treatment after the fact.
That's right. And I think obviously the prevention is much more tenable. The treatment after the fact may help people, but you still have people that end up damaged, and damaged in more than just physically. There are especially for sexually transmitted infections, especially those infections that never go away, very big stigma, interferes with relationships, quite damaging psychologically. And so, you know, you're much better off trying to prevent these illnesses instead of trying to treat them later. And so, again, the risk, and not to cause fear-mongering, but to provide people with information about the real risk of these diseases, which is starting with this article, but really to get out and advertise what the risks actually are in a realistic context. I'm not a fan of promoting fear to people, but rather saying, look, these are what the risks are, this is what the consequences are, this is how you can prevent it. And that is what has to happen, which I think has trailed off over time.
Barry, thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too, Mark.